too dominant. Women were the first medical researchers and practitioners. There has never been any clear balance between the sexes, because power goes with certain roles as it certainly goes with knowledge. The Stolen Journals.
For the Reverend Mother Tertius Eileen Antiak, this had been a disastrous morning. She had arrived on Arrakis with her fellow truthsayer Marcus Claire Lucial, both of them coming down with their official party less than 3 hours ago aboard the first shuttle from the Guild Highliner hanging in stationary orbit. First, they had been assigned rooms at the absolute edge of the Festival City's embassy quarter. The rooms were small and not quite clean. "Any farther out and we'd be camping in the slums," Lucial had said. Next, they had been denied communications facilities. All of the screens remained blank, no matter how many switches were toggled and palm dials turned. Antiak had addressed herself sharply to the heavyset officer commanding the fish speaker escort, a glowering woman with low brows and the muscles of a manual labourer. "I wish to complain to your commander." "No complaints allowed at festival time," the Amazon had rasped. Antiak had glared at the officer, a look which in Antiak's old and seamed face had been known to make even her fellow reverend mothers hesitate. The Amazon had merely smiled and said, "I have a message. I have to tell you that your audience with the God Emperor has been moved to the last position." Most of the Bene Gesserit party had heard this, and even the lowliest attendant postulate had recognized the significance. All of the spice allotments would be fixed or, the gods protect us, even gone by that time. "We were to have been third," Antiak had said, her voice remarkably mild in the circumstances. "It is the God Emperor's command." Antiak knew that tone in a fish speaker. To defy it risked violence. "A morning of disasters, and now this." Antiak occupied a low stool against one wall of a tiny, almost empty room near the centre of their inadequate quarters. Beside her there was a low pallet, no more than you would assign to an acolyte. The walls were a pale, scabrous green, and there was but one aging glow globe so defective it could not be tuned out of the yellow. The room gave signs of having been a storage chamber. It smelled musty, dents and scratches marred the black plastic of the floor. Smoothing her black arbor robe across her knees, Antiak leaned close to the postulate messenger who knelt, head bowed, directly in front of the Reverend Mother. The messenger was a doe-eyed blonde creature with a perspiration of fear and excitement on her face and neck. She wore a dusty tan robe with the dirt of the streets along its hem. "You are certain? Absolutely certain?" Antiak spoke softly to soothe the poor girl, who still trembled with the gravity of her message.
"Yes, Reverend Mother."
She kept her gaze lowered.
"Go through it once more," Antiak said. And she thought, "I'm sparring for time. I heard her correctly."
The messenger lifted her gaze to Antiak and looked directly into the totally blue eyes as all the postulates and acolytes were taught to do.
"As I was commanded, I made contact with the Ixians at their embassy and presented your greetings. I then inquired if they had any messages for me to bring back."
"Yes, yes, girl, I know. Get to the heart of it."
The messenger gulped.
"The spokesman identified himself as Otwi Yake, temporary superior in the embassy and assistant to the former ambassador."
"You're sure he was not a face dancer substitute?"
"None of the signs were there, Reverend Mother."
"Very well. We know this, Yake. You may continue."
"Yake said they were awaiting the arrival of the new
Hui Nori, the new ambassador, yes. She's due here today."
The messenger wet her lips with her tongue. Antiak made a mental note to return this poor creature to a more elementary training schedule. Messengers should have better self-control, although some allowance had to be made for the seriousness of this message.
"He then asked me to wait," the messenger said. "He left the room and returned shortly with a Tleilaxu, a face dancer, I'm sure of it. There were the certain signs of the—"
"I'm sure you're correct, girl," Antiak said. "Now, get to the—"
Antiak broke off as Lucial entered.
"What's this I hear about messages from the Ixians and Tleilaxu?"
Lucéal asked.
The girl's repeating it now, Antiak said. Why wasn't I summoned?
Antiak looked up at her fellow truthsayer, thinking that Lucéal might be one of the finest practitioners of the art, but she remained too conscious of rank. Lucéal was young, however, with the sensuous oval features of the Jessica type, and those genes tended to carry a headstrong nature. Antiak spoke softly.
Your acolyte said you were meditating.
Lucéal nodded, sat down on the pallet and spoke to the messenger.
Continue. The face dancer said he had a message for the Reverend Mothers. He used the plural, the messenger said. He knew there were two of us this time, Antiak said. Everyone knows it, Lucéal said.
Antiak returned her full attention to the messenger.
Would you enter memory trance now, girl, and give us the face dancer's words verbatim?
The messenger nodded, sat back onto her heels and clasped her hands in her lap. She took three deep breaths, closed her eyes, and let her shoulders sag. When she spoke, her voice had a high-pitched nasal twang.
Tell the Reverend Mothers that by tonight the Empire will be rid of its god emperor. We will strike him today before he reaches on. We cannot fail.
A deep breath shook the messenger. Her eyes opened and she looked up at Antiak.
The Ixion Yake told me to hurry back with this message. He then touched the back of my left hand in that particular way, further convincing me that he was not.
Yake is one of ours, Antiak said. Tell Lucéal the message of the fingers.
The messenger looked at Lucéal.
We have been invaded by face dancers and cannot move.
As Lucéal started and began to rise from the pallet, Antiak said,
I already have taken the appropriate steps to guard our doors.
Antiak looked at the messenger.
You may go now, girl. You have been adequate to your task.
Yes, Reverend Mother.
The messenger lifted her lithe body with a certain amount of grace, but there was no doubt in her movements that she knew the import of Antiak's words. Adequate was not well done. When the messenger had gone, Lucéal said,
She should have made some excuse to study the embassy and find out how many of the Ixions have been replaced.
I think not, Antiak said. In that respect, she performed well. No, but it would have been better had she found a way to get a more detailed report from Yake. I fear we have lost him.
The reason that Leilaxu sent us that message is obvious, of course,
Lucéal said.
They are really going to attack him, Antiak said.
Naturally, it's what the fools would do. But I address myself to why they sent the message to us.
Antiak nodded.
They think we now have no choice except to join them.
And if we try to warn the Lord Leto that Leilaxu will learn our messengers and their contacts.
What if the Leilaxu succeed? Antiak asked.
Not likely.
We do not know their actual plan, only its general timing.
What if this girl, this Siona, has a part in it? Lucéal asked.
I have asked myself that same question. Have you heard the full report from the guild?
Only the summary. Is that enough?
Yes, with high probability.
You should be careful with terms such as high probability, Lucéal said. We don't want anyone thinking you're a mentat.
Antiak's tone was dry.
I presume you will not give me away?
Do you think the guild is right about this, Siona? Lucéal asked.
I do not have enough information. If they are right, she is something extraordinary.
As the Lord Leto's father was extraordinary?
A guild navigator could conceal himself from the oracular eye of the Lord Leto's father.
But not from the Lord Leto.
I have read the full guild report with care. She does not so much conceal herself and the actions around her as, well,
she fades, they said. She fades from their sight.
She alone, Antiak said.
And from the sight of the Lord Leto as well?
They do not know.
Do we dare make contact with her?
Do we dare not? Antiak asked.
This all may be moot if the Tleilaxu...
Antiak, we should at least make the attempt to warn him. We have no communications devices,
and there now are fish speaker guards at the door. They permit our people to enter, but not to leave. Should we speak to one of them? I have thought about that. We can always say we feared they were face dancer substitutes.
Guards at the door, Lusail muttered. Is it possible that he knows?
Anything is possible.
With a Lord Leto, that's the only thing you can say for sure, Lusail said.
Antiak permitted herself a small sigh as she lifted herself from the stool.
How I long for the old days when we had all of the spice we could ever need.
Ever was just another illusion, Lusail said. I hope we have learned our lesson well, no matter how the Tleilaxu make out today.
They will do it clumsily, whatever the outcome, Antiak grumbled. Gods, there are no good assassins to be found any more.
There are always the Gola Idahos, Lusail said.
What did you say?
Antiak stared at her companion.
There are always—
Yes!
The Golas are too slow in the body, Lusail said, but not in the head.
What are you thinking? Is it possible that the Tleilaxu— No, not even they could be that.
An Idaho face dancer? Lusail whispered.
Antiak nodded mutely.
Put it out of your mind, Lusail said. They could not be that stupid.
That's a dangerous judgment to make about Tleilaxu, Antiak said. We must prepare ourselves for the worst. Get one of those fish speaker guards in here.
Unceasing warfare gives rise to its own social conditions, which have been similar in all epochs. People enter a permanent state of alertness to ward off attacks. You see the absolute rule of the autocrat. All new things become dangerous frontier districts, new planets, new economic areas to exploit, new ideas or new devices, visitors, everything suspect. Feudalism takes firm hold, sometimes disguised as a politburo or similar structure, but always present. Hereditary succession follows the lines of power. The blood of the powerful dominates. The vice-regents of heaven or their equivalent apportion the wealth. And they know they must control inheritance or slowly let the power melt away. Now, do you understand Leto's peace? The Stolen Journals.
Have the Bene Gesserit been informed of the new schedule? Leto asked. His entourage had entered the first shallow cut, which would wind into switchbacks at the approach to the bridge across the Idaho River. The sun stood at the morning's first quarter, and a few courtiers were shedding cloaks. Idaho walked with a small troop of fish speakers at the left flank, his uniform beginning to show traces of dust and perspiration. Walking and trotting at the speed of a royal peregrination was hard work. Moneo stumbled and caught himself.
They have been informed, Lord.
The change of schedule had not been easy, but Moneo had learned to expect erratic shifts of direction at festival time. He kept contingency plans at the ready.
Are they still petitioning for a permanent embassy on Arrakis?
Leto asked.
Yes, Lord. I gave them the usual answer.
A simple no should suffice, Leto said. They no longer need to be reminded that I abhor their religious pretensions.
Yes, Lord.
Moneo held himself to just within the prescribed distance beside Leto's cart. The worm was very much present this morning, the bodily signs quite apparent to Moneo's eyes. No doubt it was the moisture in the air. That always seemed to bring out the worm.
Religion always leads to rhetorical despotism, Leto said. Before the Bene Gesserit, the Jesuits were the best at it.
Jesuits, Lord?
Surely you've met them in your histories?
I'm not certain, Lord. When were they?
No matter. You learn enough about rhetorical despotism from a study of the Bene Gesserit. Of course, they do not begin by deluding themselves with it.
The Reverend Mothers are in for a bad time, Moneo told himself. He's going to preach at them. They detest that. This could cause serious trouble.
What was their reaction? Leto asked.
I'm told they were disappointed but did not press the matter.
And Moneo thought,
I'd best prepare them for more disappointment, and they'll have to be kept away from the delegations of Ix and Leilaxu.
Moneo shook his head. This could lead to some very nasty plotting. The Duncan had better be warned.
It leads to self-fulfilling prophecy and justifications for all manner of obscenities, Leto said.
This rhetorical despotism, Lord?
Yes. It shields evil behind walls of self-righteousness, which are proof against all arguments against the evil.
Moneo kept a wary eye on Leto's body, noting the way the hands twisted, almost a random movement, the twitching of the great ribbed segments.
What will I do if the worm comes out of him here?
Perspiration broke out on Moneo's forehead.
It feeds on deliberately twisted meanings to discredit opposition, Leto said.
All of that, Lord?
The Jesuits called that securing your power base. It leads directly to hypocrisy, which is always betrayed by the gap between actions and explanations. They never agree.
I must study this more carefully, Lord.
Ultimately, it rules by guilt, because hypocrisy brings on the witch hunt and the demand for scapegoats.
Shocking, Lord.
The cortege rounded a corner where the rock had been opened for a glimpse of the bridge in the distance.
Moneo, are you paying close attention to me?
Yes, Lord, indeed.
I'm describing a tool of the religious power base.
I recognize that, Lord.
Then why are you so afraid?
Talk of religious power always makes me uneasy, Lord.
Because you and the fish speakers wield it in my name?
Of course, Lord.
Power bases are very dangerous because they attract people who are truly insane, people who seek power only for the sake of power, do you understand?
Yes, Lord. That is why you so seldom grant petitions for appointments in your government.
Excellent, Moneo.
Thank you, Lord.
In the shadow of every religion lurks a Torquemada,
Leto said.
You have never encountered that name. I know, because I caused it to be expunged from all the records.
Why was that, Lord?
He was an obscenity. He made living torches out of people who disagreed with him.
Moneo pitched his voice low.
Like the historians who angered you, Lord?
Do you question my actions, Moneo?
No, Lord.
Good. The historians died peacefully. Not a one felt the flames. Torquemada, however, delighted in commending to his god the agonized screams of his burning victims.
How horrible, Lord.
The cortege turned another corner with a view of the bridge. The span appeared to be no closer. Once more Moneo studied his god emperor. The worm appeared no closer. Still too close, though. Moneo could feel the menace of that unpredictable presence, the holy presence which could kill without warning. Moneo shuddered. What had been the meaning of that strange sermon? Moneo knew that few had ever heard the god emperor speak thus. It was a privilege and a burden. It was part of the price paid for Leto's peace. Generation after generation marched in their ordered way under the dictates of that peace. Only the Citadel's inner circle knew all of the infrequent breaks in that peace, the incidents when fish speakers were sent out in anticipation of violence.
Anticipation?
Moneo glanced at the now silent Leto. The God Emperor's eyes were closed and a look of brooding had come over his face. That was another of the worm signs. A bad one. Moneo trembled. Did Leto anticipate even his own moments of wild violence? It was the anticipation of violence which sent tremors of awe and fear throughout the Empire. Leto knew where guards must be posted to put down a transitory uprising. He knew it before the event. Even thinking about such matters dried Moneo's mouth. There were times, Moneo believed, when the God Emperor could read any mind. Oh, Leto employed spies. An occasional shrouded figure passed by the fish speakers for the climb to Leto's Tower Eyrie, or descended to the crypt. Spies, no doubt of it. But Moneo suspected they were used merely to confirm what Leto already knew. As though to confirm the fears in Moneo's mind, Leto said,
"Do not try to force an understanding of my ways, Moneo. Let understanding come of itself."
"I will try, Lord."
"No, do not try." Tell me instead if you have announced yet that there will be no changes in the spice allotments.
Not yet, Lord.
Delay the announcement. I am changing my mind. You know, of course, that there will be new offers of bribes.
Moneo sighed. The amounts offered him in bribes had reached ridiculous heights. Leto, however, had appeared amused by the escalation.
Draw them out, he had said earlier. See how high they will go. Make it appear that you can be bribed at last.
Now, as they turned another corner with a view of the bridge, Leto asked,
Has House Corino offered you a bribe?
Yes, Lord.
Do you know the myth which says that some day House Corino will be restored to its ancient powers?
I have heard it, Lord.
Have the Corino killed. It is a task for the Duncan. We will test him.
So soon, Lord?
It is still known that melange can extend human life. Let it also be known that the spice can shorten life.
As you command, Lord.
Moneo knew this response in himself. It was the way he spoke when he could not voice a deep objection which he felt. He also knew that the Lord Leto understood this and was amused by it. The amusement rankled.
Try not to be impatient with me, Moneo, Leto said.
Moneo suppressed his feeling of bitterness. Bitterness brought peril. Rebels were bitter. The Duncans grew bitter before they died.
Time has a different meaning for you than it has for me, Lord,
Moneo said.
I wish I could know that meaning.
You could, but you will not.
Moneo heard rebuke in the words and fell silent, turning his thoughts instead to the melange problems. It was not often that the Lord Leto spoke of the spice, and then it usually was to set allotments, or withdraw them, to apportion rewards, or send the fish speakers after some newly revealed hoard. The greatest remaining store of spice, Moneo knew, lay in some place known only to the God Emperor. In his first days of royal service, Moneo had been covered in a hood and led by the Lord Leto himself to that secret place along twisting passages which Moneo had sensed were underground.
When I removed the hood, we were underground.
The place had filled Moneo with awe. Great bins of melange lay all around in a gigantic room cut from native rock and illuminated by glow globes of an ancient design with arabesques of metal scrollwork upon them. The spice had glowed radiant blue in the dim silver light. And the smell, bitter cinnamon, unmistakable. There had been water dripping nearby. Their voices had echoed against the stone.
One day all of this will be gone, the Lord Leto had said.
Shocked, Moneo had asked,
What will Guild and Bene Gesserit do then?
What they are doing now, but more violently.
Staring around the gigantic room with its enormous store of melange, Moneo could only think of things he knew were happening in the Empire at that moment. Bloody assassinations, piratical raids, spying and intrigue. The God Emperor kept a lid on the worst of it, but what remained was bad enough.
The temptation?
Moneo whispered.
The temptation indeed.
Will there be no more melange ever, Lord?
Some day I will go back into the sand. I will be the source of spice then.
You, Lord?
And I will produce something just as wonderful, more sand trout, a hybrid and a prolific breeder.
Trembling at this revelation, Moneo stared at the shadowy figure of the God Emperor who spoke of such marvels.
The sand trout, Lord Leto said, will link themselves into large living bubbles to enclose this planet's water deep underground, just as it was in the Dune time.
All of the water, Lord?
Most of it. Within 300 years the sandworm once more will reign here. It will be a new kind of sandworm, I promise you.
How is that, Lord?
It will have animal awareness and a new cunning. The spice will be more dangerous to seek and far more perilous to keep.
Moneo had looked up at the cavern's rocky ceiling, his imagination probing through the rock to the surface.
Everything desert again, Lord?
Watercourses will fill with sand. Crops will be choked and killed. Trees will be covered by great moving dunes. The sand death will spread until a subtle signal is heard in the barren lands.
What signal, Lord?
The signal for the next cycle, the coming of the Maker, the coming of Shai Cholud.
Will that be you, Lord?
Yes. The great sandworm of Dune will rise once more from the deeps. This land will be again the domain of spice and worm.
But what of the people, Lord? All of the people?
Many will die. Food plants and the abundant growth of this land will be parched. Without nourishment, meat animals will die.
Will everyone go hungry, Lord?
Undernourishment and the old diseases will stalk the land, while only the hardiest survive, the hardiest and most brutal.
Must that be, Lord?
The alternatives are worse.
Teach me about those alternatives, Lord.
In time, you will know them.
As he marched beside the God Emperor in the morning light of their peregrination to Ong, Moneo could only admit that he had indeed learned of alternative evils. To most of the Empire's docile citizens, Moneo knew, the firm knowledge which he held in his own head lay concealed in the oral history, in the myths and wild stories told by infrequent mad prophets who cropped up on one planet or another to gather a short-lived following.
But I know what the fish speakers do.
And he knew also about evil men who sat at table, gorging themselves on rare delicacies while they watched the torture of fellow humans. Until the fish speakers came, and gore erased such scenes.
I enjoyed the way your daughter watched me, Leto said. She was so unaware that I knew.
Lord, I fear for her. She is my blood, my—
Mine too, Moneo. Am I not Atreides? You would be better employed fearing for yourself.
Moneo cast a fearful glance along the God Emperor's body. The signs of the worm remained too near. Moneo glanced at the cortege following, then along the road ahead. They now were into the steep descent, the switchbacks short and cut into high walls in the man-piled rocks of the cliff barrier which girdled the Sarir.
Siona does not offend me, Moneo.
But she—
Moneo! Here, in its mysterious capsule, is one of life's great secrets. To be surprised, to have a new thing occur, that is what I desire most.
Lord, I—
New. Isn't that a radiant, a wonderful word?
If you say it, Lord.
Leto was forced to remind himself then, Moneo is my creature. I created him.
Your child is worth almost any price to me, Moneo. You decry her companions, but there may be one among them that she will love.
Moneo cast an involuntary glance back at Duncan Idaho marching with the guards. Idaho was glaring ahead as though trying to probe each turn in the road before they reached it. He did not like this place, with its high walls all around from which attack might come. Idaho had sent scouts up there in the night, and Moneo knew that some of them still lurked on the heights. But there also were ravines ahead before the marchers reached the river, and there had not been enough guards to station them everywhere.
We will depend upon the Fremen,
Moneo had reassured him.
Fremen?
Idaho did not like what he heard about the museum Fremen.
At least they can sound an alarm against intruders,
Moneo had said.
You saw them and asked them to do that?
Of course.
Moneo had not dared to broach the subject of Siona to Idaho. Time enough for that, later. But now the God Emperor had said a disturbing thing. Had there been a change in plans? Moneo returned his attention to the God Emperor and lowered his voice.
Love a companion, Lord? But you said the Duncan—
I said love, not breed with.
Moneo trembled, thinking of how his own mating had been arranged, the wrenching away from—
No. Best not follow those memories.
There had been affection, even a real love, later, but in the first days.
You are wool gathering again, Moneo?
Forgive me, Lord, but when you speak of love—
You think I have no tender thoughts?
It's not that, Lord, but—
You think I have no memories of love and breeding, then?
The cart swerved toward Moneo, forcing him to dodge away, frightened by the glowering look on the Lord Leto's face.
Lord, I beg you.
This body may never have known such tenderness, but all of the memories are mine.
Moneo could see the signs of the worm growing more dominant in the God Emperor's body, and there was no escaping recognition of this mood.
I'm in grave danger. We all are.
Moneo grew aware of every sound around him, the creaking of the royal cart, the coughs and low conversation from the entourage, the feet on the roadway. There was an exhalation of cinnamon from the God Emperor. The air here between the enclosing rock walls still held its morning chill, and there was dampness from the river. Was it the moisture bringing out the worm?
Listen to me, Moneo, as though your life depended on it.
Yes, Lord,
Moneo whispered, and he knew his life did depend on the care he took now, not only in listening, but in observing.
Part of me dwells forever underground, without thought,
Leto said.
That part reacts. It does things without a care for knowing or logic.
Moneo nodded, his attention glued on the God Emperor's face. Were the eyes about to glaze?
I am forced to stand off and watch such things. Nothing more,
Leto said.
Such a reaction could cause your death. The choice is not mine. Do you hear?
I hear you, Lord,
Moneo whispered.
There is no such thing as choice in such an event. You accept it, merely accept it. You will never understand it or know it. What do you say to that?
I fear the unknown, Lord.
But I don't fear it. Tell me why.
Moneo had been expecting a crisis such as this, but now that it had come, he almost welcomed it. He knew that his life depended on his answer. He stared at his God Emperor, mind racing.
It is because of all your memories, Lord.
Yes?
An incomplete answer, then. Moneo grasped at words.
You see everything that we know, all of it as it once was, unknown. A surprise to you. A surprise must be merely something new for you to know.
As he spoke, Moneo realized he had put a defensive question mark on something that should have been a bold statement. But the God Emperor only smiled.
For such wisdom I grant you a boon, Moneo. What is your wish?
Sudden relief only opened a path for other fears to emerge.
Could I bring Siona back to the Citadel?
That will cause me to test her sooner.
She must be separated from her companions, Lord.
Very well.
My Lord is gracious.
I am selfish.
The God Emperor turned away from Moneo then and fell silent. Looking along the segmented body, Moneo observed that the worm signs had subsided somewhat. This had turned out well after all. He thought then of the Fremen with their petition, and fear returned.
That was a mistake. They will only arouse him again. Why did I say they could present their petition?
The Fremen would be waiting up ahead, marshalled on this side of the river with their foolish papers waving in their hands. Moneo marched in silence, his apprehension increasing with each step.
Over here sand blows, over there sand blows. Over there a rich man waits, over here I wait. The Voice of Shai Hulud from the Oral History.
Sister Chenoweth's account, found among her papers after her death.
I obey both my tenets as a Bene Gesserit and the commands of the God Emperor by withholding these words from my report without secreting them, that they may be found when I am gone. For the Lord Leto said to me, you will return to your superiors with my message, but these words keep secret for now. I will visit my rage upon your sisterhood if you fail. As the Reverend Mother Siaxa warned me before I left, you must do nothing which will bring down his wrath upon us. While I ran beside the Lord Leto on that short peregrination of which I had spoken, I thought to ask him about his likeness to a Reverend Mother. I said, Lord, I know how it is that a Reverend Mother acquires the memories of her ancestors and of others. How was it with you? It was a design of our genetic history and the working of the spice. My twin sister Ghanima and I were awakened in the womb, aroused before birth into the presence of our ancestral memories. Lord, my sisterhood calls that abomination. And rightly so, the Lord Leto said. The ancestral numbers can be overwhelming. And who knows before the event which force will command such a horde, good or evil? Lord, how did you overcome such a force? I did not overcome it, the Lord Leto said, but the persistence of the pharaonic model saved both Ghani and me. Do you know that model, Sister Chenoweth? We of the sisterhood are well coached in history, Lord. Yes, but you do not think of this as I do, the Lord Leto said. I speak of a disease of government which was caught by the Greeks who spread it to the Romans, who distributed it so far and wide that it never has completely died out. Does my Lord speak riddles? No riddles. I hate this thing, but it saved us. Ghani and I formed powerful internal alliances with ancestors who followed the pharaonic model. They helped us form a mingled identity within that long dormant mob. I find this disturbing, Lord, and well you should. Why are you telling me this now, Lord? You have never answered one of us before in this manner, not that I know of. Because you listen well, Sister Chenoweth, because you will obey me, and because I will never see you again. The Lord Leto spoke those strange words to me, and then he asked, Why have you not inquired about what your sisterhood calls my insane tyranny? Emboldened by this manner, I ventured to say, Lord, we know about some of your bloody executions. They trouble us. The Lord Leto then did a strange thing. He closed his eyes as we went, and he said, Because I know you have been trained to record accurately whatever words you hear, I will speak to you now, Sister Chenoweth, as though you were a page in one of my journals. Preserve these words well, for I do not want them lost. I assure my sisterhood now that what follows, exactly as he spoke them, are the words uttered then by the Lord Leto. To my certain knowledge, when I am no longer consciously present here among you, when I am here only as a fearsome creature of the desert, many people will look back upon me as a tyrant. Fair enough, I have been tyrannical. A tyrant, not fully human, not insane, merely a tyrant. But even ordinary tyrants have motives and feelings beyond those usually assigned them by facile historians, and they will think of me as a great tyrant. Thus, my feelings and motives are a legacy I would preserve lest history distort them too much. History has a way of magnifying some characteristics while it discards others. People will try to understand me and to frame me in their words. They will seek truth, but the truth always carries the ambiguity of the words used to express it. You will not understand me. The harder you try, the more remote I will become, until finally I vanish into eternal myth, a living god at last. That's it, you see. I am not a leader, nor even a guide. A god. Remember that. I am quite different from leaders and guides. Gods need take no responsibility for anything except Genesis. Gods accept everything and thus accept nothing. Gods must be identifiable yet remain anonymous. Gods do not need a spirit world. My spirits dwell within me, answerable to my slightest summons. I share with you, because it pleases me to do so, what I have learned about them and through them. They are my truth. Beware of the truth, gentle sister, although much sought-after truth can be dangerous to the seeker. Myths and reassuring lies are much easier to find and believe. If you find a truth, even a temporary one, it can demand that you make painful changes. Conceal your truths within words. Natural ambiguity will protect you then. Words are much easier to absorb than are the sharp Delphic stabs of wordless portent. With words, you can cry out in the chorus, Why didn't someone warn me? But I did warn you. I warned you by example, not with words. There are inevitably more than enough words. You record them in your marvelous memory even now, and some day my journals will be discovered. More words. I warn you that you read my words at your peril. The wordless movement of terrible events lies just below their surface. Be deaf. You do not need to hear, or hearing you do not need to remember. How soothing it is to forget, and how dangerous. Words such as mine have long been recognized for their mysterious power. There is a secret knowledge here which can be used to rule the forgetful. My truths are the substance of myths and lies which tyrants have always counted on to maneuver the masses for selfish design. You see,
I share it all with you, even the greatest mystery of all time, the mystery by which I compose my life. I reveal it to you in words. The only past which endures lies wordlessly within you. The God Emperor fell silent then. I dared to ask, are those all of the words that my lord wishes me to preserve? Those are the words, the God Emperor said, and I thought he sounded tired, discouraged. He had the sound of someone uttering a last testament. I recalled that he had said he would never see me again, and I was fearful, but I praise my teachers because the fear did not emerge in my voice. Lord Leto, I said, these journals of which you speak, for whom are they written? For posterity after the span of millennia. I personalize those distant readers, Sister Chenoe. I think of them as distant cousins filled with family curiosities. They are intent on unraveling the dramas which only I can recount. They want to make the personal connections to their own lives. They want the meanings, the truth. But you warn us against truth, Lord, I said. Indeed, all of history is a malleable instrument in my hands. Oh, I have accumulated all of these pasts, and I possess every fact. Yet the facts are mine to use as I will, and even using them truthfully, I change them. What am I speaking to you now? What is a diary? A journal? Words. Again, the Lord Leto fell silent. I weighed the portent of what he had said, weighed it against the admonition of Reverend Mother Siaxa, and against the things that the God Emperor had uttered to me earlier. He said I was his messenger, and thus I felt that I was under his protection, and might dare more than any other. Thus it was that I said, Lord Leto, you have said that you will not see me again. Does that mean you are about to die? I swear it here in my record of this event. The Lord Leto laughed. Then he said, No, gentle sister, it is you who will die. You will not live to be a reverend mother. Do not be saddened by this, for by your presence here today, by carrying my message back to the sisterhood, by preserving my secret words as well, you will achieve a far greater status. You become here an integral part of my myth. Our distant cousins will pray to you for intercession with me. Again the Lord Leto laughed, but it was a gentle laughter, and he smiled upon me warmly. I find it difficult to record here with that accuracy which I am enjoined to employ in every accounting such as this one, yet in the moment that the Lord Leto spoke these terrible words to me, I felt a profound bond of friendship with him, as though some physical thing had leaped between us, tying us together in a way that words cannot fully describe. It was not until the instant of this experience that I understood what he had meant by the wordless truth. It happened, yet I cannot describe it.
Archivist's note. Because of intervening events, the discovery of this private record is now little more than a footnote to history. Interesting because it contains one of the earliest references to the God Emperor's secret journals. For those wishing to explore further into this account, a reference may be made to archive records, subheadings Chenoe, Holy Sister Quintinius Violet, Chenoe Report The, and Melange Rejection, Medical Aspects of. Footnote. Sister Quintinius Violet Chenoe died in the 53rd year of her sisterhood, the cause being ascribed to melange incompatibility during her attempt to achieve the status of Reverend Mother.
Our ancestor, Assur Nasser Apli, who was known as the cruelest of the cruel, seized the throne by slaying his own father and starting the reign of the sword. His conquests included the Urumia Lake region, which led him to Comagen and Khabur. His son received tribute from the Shuites, from Tyre, Sidon, Gabel, and even from Jehu, son of Omri, whose very name struck terror into thousands. The conquests which began with Assur Nasser Apli carried arms into Media and later into Israel, Damascus, Edom, Arpad, Babylon, and Umnas. Does anyone remember these names and places now? I have given you enough clues. Try to name the planet. The stolen journals.
The air was stagnant, deep within the carved cut of the Royal Road, leading down to the flat approach to the bridge across the Idaho River. The road turned to the right out of the man-made immensity of rock and earth. Moneo, walking beside the royal cart, saw the paved ribbon leading across a narrow ridgetop to the lacery of plasteel, which was the bridge almost a kilometre distant. The river, still deep in a chasm, turned inward toward him on the right, and then ran straight through multi-stage cascades toward the far side of the Forbidden Forest, where the confining walls dropped down almost to the level of the water. There, at the outskirts of On, lay the orchards and gardens which helped to feed the city. Moneo, looking at the distant stretch of river visible from where he walked, saw that the canyon top was bathed in light, while the water still flowed in shadows broken only by the faint, silvery shimmering of the cascades. Straight ahead of him, the road to the bridge was brilliant in sunlight, the dark shadows of erosion gullies on both sides set off like arrows to indicate the correct path. The rising sun already had made the roadway hot. The air trembled above it, a warning of the day to come.
"We'll be safe into the city before the worst of the heat," Moneo thought.
He trotted along in the weary patience which always overcame him at this point, his gaze fixed forward in expectation of the petitioning Museum Fremen. They would come up out of one of the erosion gullies, he knew, somewhere on this side of the bridge. That was the arrangement he had made with them, no way to stop them now. And the God Emperor still showed signs of the worm. Leto heard the Fremen before any of his party either saw or heard them.
"Listen," he said.
Moneo came to full alert. Leto rolled his body on the cart, arched the front upward out of the bubble shield, and peered ahead. Moneo knew this kind of thing well. The God Emperor's senses, much more acute than any of those around him, had detected a disturbance ahead. The Fremen were beginning to move up to the road. Moneo let himself fall back one pace and moved out to the limit of his dutiful position. He heard it himself then. There was the sound of gravel spilling. The first Fremen appeared, coming up out of gullies on both sides of the road, no more than 100 meters ahead of the royal party. Duncan Idaho dashed forward and slowed himself to a trot beside Moneo.
"Are those the Fremen?" Idaho asked.
"Yes."
Moneo spoke with his attention on the God Emperor, who had lowered his bulk back onto the cart. The Museum Fremen assembled on the road, dropped their outer robes to reveal inner robes of red and purple. Moneo gasped. The Fremen were togged out as pilgrims, with some kind of black garment under the colourful robes. The ones in the foreground waved rolls of paper as the entire group began singing and dancing toward the royal entourage.
"A petition, Lord!" the leaders cried. "Hear our petition!"
"Duncan!"
Leto cried.
"Clear them out!"
Fish speakers surged forward through the courtiers as their lord shouted. Idaho waved them forward and began running toward the approaching mob. The guards formed a phalanx, Idaho at the apex. Leto slammed closed the bubble cover of his cart, increased its speed, and called out in an amplified roar,
"Clear away! Clear away!"
The Museum Fremen, seeing the guards run forward, the cart picking up speed as Leto shouted, made as though to open a path up the center of the road. Moneo, forced to run to keep up with the cart, his attention momentarily on the running footsteps of the courtiers behind him, saw the first unexpected change of program by the Fremen. As one person, the chanting throng threw off the pilgrim cloaks to reveal black uniforms identical to those worn by Idaho.
"What are they doing?" Moneo wondered.
Even while he was asking himself this question, Moneo saw the flesh of the approaching faces melt away in face-dancer mockery, every face resolving into a likeness of Duncan Idaho.
"Face-dancers!"
someone screamed. Leto, too, had been distracted by the confusion of events, the sounds of many feet running on the road, the barked orders as fish speakers formed their phalanx. He had applied more speed to his cart, closing the distance between himself and the guards, beginning then to ring a warning bell and sound the cart's distortion klaxon. White noise blared across the scene, disorienting even some of the fish speakers who were conditioned to it. At that instant, the petitioners discarded their pilgrim cloaks and began the transformation maneuver, their faces flickering into likenesses of Duncan Idaho. Leto heard the scream. "Face dancers!" He identified its source, a consort clerk in royal accounting. Leto's initial reaction was amusement. Guards and face dancers collided. Screams and shouts replaced the petitioners' chanting. Leto recognized Lelaxu battle commands. A thick knot of fish speakers formed around the black-clad figure of his Duncan. The guards were obeying Leto's oft-repeated instruction to protect their Gola commander.
But how will they tell him from the others?
Leto brought his cart almost to a stop. He could see fish speakers on the left swinging their stun clubs. Sunlight flashed from knives. Then came the buzzing hum of laser guns, a sound Leto's grandmother had once described as the most terrible in our universe. More hoarse shouts and screams erupted from the vanguard. Leto reacted with the first sound of laser guns. He swerved the royal cart off the road to his right, shifted from wheels to suspensers, and drove the vehicle back like a battering ram into a clot of face dancers trying to enter the fray from his side. Turning in a tight arc, he hit more of them on the other side, feeling the crushing impact of flesh against plasteel. A red spray of blood, then he was down off the road into an erosion gully. The brown, serrated sides of the gully flashed past him. He swept upward and swooped across the river canyon to a high, rock-girt viewpoint beside the royal road. There he stopped and turned, well beyond the range of hand-held laser guns.
What a surprise!
Laughter shook his great body with grunting, trembling convulsions. Slowly the amusement subsided. From his vantage, Leto could see the bridge and the area of the attack. Bodies lay in tangled disarray all across the scene and into the flanking gullies. He recognized courtier finery, fish speaker uniforms, the bloodied black of the face dancer disguises. Surviving courtiers huddled in the background while fish speakers sped among the fallen, making sure the attackers were dead with a swift knife stroke into each body. Leto swept his gaze across the scene, searching for the black uniform of his Duncan. There was not one such uniform standing. Not one. Leto put down a surge of frustration, then saw a clutch of fish speaker guards among the courtiers and a naked figure there.
Naked.
It was Duncan.
Naked, of course.
The Duncan Idaho, without a uniform, was not a face dancer. Again, laughter shook him. Surprises on both sides. What a shock that must have been to the attackers. Obviously, they had not prepared themselves for such a response. Leto eased his cart out onto the roadway, dropped the wheels into position and rolled down to the bridge. He crossed the bridge with a sense of déjà vu, aware of the countless bridges in his memories, the crossings to view the aftermaths of battles. As he cleared the bridge, Idaho broke from the knot of guards and ran toward him, skipping and dodging the bodies. Leto stopped his cart and stared at the naked runner. The Duncan was like a Greek warrior messenger dashing toward his commander to report the outcome of battle. The condensation of history stunned Leto's memories. Idaho skidded to a stop beside the cart. Leto opened the bubble cover.
"Face dancers! Every damned one!"
Idaho panted. Not trying to conceal his amusement, Leto asked,
"Whose idea was it to strip off your uniform?"
"Mine, but they wouldn't let me fight."
Moneo came running up then with a group of guards. One of the fish speakers tossed a guard's blue cloak to Idaho, calling out,
"We're trying to salvage a complete uniform from the bodies."
"I ripped mine off,"
Idaho explained.
"Did any of the face dancers escape?"
Moneo asked.
"Not a one,"
Idaho said.
"I admit your women are good fighters, but why wouldn't they let me get into—"
"Because they have instructions to protect you,"
Leto said.
"They always protect the most valuable—"
"Four of them died getting me out of there,"
Idaho said.
"We lost more than 30 people altogether, Lord,"
Moneo said.
"We're still counting."
"How many face dancers?"
Leto asked.
"It looks like there were an even 50 of them, Lord,"
Moneo said. He spoke softly, a stricken look on his face. Leto began to chuckle.
"Why are you laughing?" Idaho demanded. "More than 30 of our people."
"But the Relaxu was so inept," Leto said. "Do you not realize that only about 500 years ago they would have been far more efficient, far more dangerous? Imagine them daring that foolish masquerade and not anticipating your brilliant response."
"They had laser guns," Idaho said.
Leto twisted his bulky forward segments around and pointed at a hole burned in his canopy almost at the cart's midpoint. A melted and fused starburst surrounded the hole.
"They hit several other places underneath," Leto said. "Fortunately, they did not damage any suspensors or wheels."
Idaho stared at the hole in the canopy, noted that it lined up with Leto's body.
"Didn't it hit you?"
he asked.
"Oh, yes," Leto said.
"Are you injured?"
"I am immune to laser guns," Leto lied. "When we get time, I will demonstrate."
"Well, I'm not immune," Idaho said, "and neither are your guards. Every one of us should have a shield belt."
"Shields are banned throughout the Empire," Leto said. "It is a capital offense to have a shield."
"The question of shields,"
Moneo ventured. Idaho thought Moneo was asking for an explanation of shields and said,
"The belts develop a force field which will repel any object trying to enter at a dangerous speed. They have one major drawback. If you intersect the force field with a laser gun beam, the resultant explosion rivals that of a very large fusion bomb. Attacker and attacked go together."
Moneo only stared at Idaho, who nodded.
"I see why they were banned," Idaho said. "I presume the Great Convention Against Atomics is still in force and working well?"
"Working even better since we searched out all of the family atomics and removed them to a safe place," Leto said. "But we do not have time to discuss such matters here."
"We can discuss one thing," Idaho said. "Walking out here in the open is too dangerous.
We should—" "It is the tradition, and we will continue it," Leto said.
Moneo leaned close to Idaho's ear.
"You are disturbing the Lord Leto,"
he said.
"But have you not considered how much easier it is to control a walking population?"
Moneo asked. Idaho jerked around to stare into Moneo's eyes with sudden comprehension. Leto took the opportunity to begin issuing orders.
"Moneo, see that there is no sign of the attack left here, not one spot of blood or a torn rag of clothing, nothing."
"Yes, Lord."
Idaho turned at the sound of people pressing close around them, saw that all of the survivors, even the wounded wearing emergency bandages, had come up to listen.
"All of you,"
Leto said, addressing the throng around the cart.
"Not a word of this. Let the Tleilaxu worry."
He looked at Idaho.
"Duncan, how did those face dancers get into a region where only my museum Fremen should roam free?"
Idaho glanced involuntarily at Moneo.
"Lord, it is my fault,"
Moneo said.
"I was the one who arranged for the Fremen to present their petition here. I even reassured Duncan Idaho about them."
"I recall your mentioning the petition,"
Leto said.
"I thought it might amuse you, Lord."
"Petitions do not amuse me. They annoy me. I am especially annoyed by petitions from people whose one purpose in my scheme of things is to preserve the ancient forms."
"Lord, it was just that you have spoken so many times about the boredom of these peregrinations into—"
"But I am not here to ease the boredom of others."
"Lord?"
"The Museum Fremen understand nothing about the old ways. They are only good at going through the motions. This naturally bores them, and their petitions always seek to introduce changes. That's what annoys me. I will not permit changes. Now, where did you learn of the supposed petition?"
"From the Fremen themselves,"
Moneo said.
"Adela—"
He broke off, scowling.
"Were the members of the delegation known to you?"
"Of course, Lord. Otherwise I—"
"They're dead,"
Idaho said. Moneo looked at him, uncomprehending.
"The people you knew were killed and replaced by face dancer mimics," Idaho said.
"I have been remiss," Leto said. "I should have taught all of you how to detect face dancers. It will be corrected now that they grow foolishly bold."
"Why are they so bold?"
Idaho asked.
"Perhaps to distract us from something else,"
Moneo said. Leto smiled at Moneo. Under the stress of personal threat, the Majordomo's mind worked well. He had failed his lord by mistaking face dancer mimics for known Fremen. Now, Moneo felt that his continued service might depend upon those abilities for which the God Emperor had originally chosen him.
"And now we have time to prepare ourselves," Leto said.
"Distract us from what?"
Idaho demanded.
"From another plot in which they participate," Leto said. "They think I will punish them severely for this, but the Tleilaxu Corps remains safe because of you, Duncan."
"I didn't intend to fail here," Idaho said.
"But it was a contingency for which they were prepared," Moneo said.
"They believe I will not destroy them, because they hold the original cells of my Duncan Idaho," Leto said. "Do you understand, Duncan?"
"Are they right?" Idaho demanded.
"They approach being wrong," Leto said.
He returned his attention to Moneo.
"No sign of this event must go with us to On. Fresh uniforms, new guards to replace the dead and wounded, everything just as it was."
"There are dead among your courtiers, Lord,"
Moneo said.
"Replace them."
Moneo bowed.
"Yes, Lord."
"And send for a new canopy to my cart."
"As my lord commands."
Leto backed his cart a few paces away, turned it, and headed for the bridge, calling back to Idaho,
"Duncan, you will accompany me?"
Slowly at first, reluctance heavy in every movement, Idaho left Moneo and the others, then, increasing his pace, came up beside the cart's open bubble and walked there while staring in at Leto.
"What troubles you, Duncan?" Leto asked.
"Do you really think of me as your Duncan?"
"Of course, just as you think of me as your Leto."
"Why didn't you know this attack was coming?"
"Through my vaunted prescience?"
"Yes."
"The face dancers have